What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets, powered by FTN. I'm your host, Chris Meany. Thanks, as always, for taking the time to hang out this weekend. I got a jam-packed show for you, a lot to get to on this episode. Going to run through some news and notes, some injuries. It's not all negative this week as well. I know it took me about 15 minutes to roll through all of the injuries last week. There's not a ton of them to talk about this week, and there's two really just nice notes to run through this week. That's right, we could see two of the game's top players return to action this week in Michael Thomas and Chris McCaffrey. I'm fired up. You can see the smile. Looks like I slept with a clothes hanger in my mouth for about a week. I just cannot wait to get Michael Thomas back into my lineups. I've been waiting for this guy. I'm sure you have as well at home. You're waiting for CMC. You're waiting for Michael Thomas. Hopefully, you've been able to weather the storm, and now it's crunch time for you to be able to get these guys back in your lineup is absolutely key. They have the upside to win you the rest of the weeks. They really do. I mean, maybe not CMC week 13 because he's on a bye, but you know, week 9, 10, 11, 12, you could get W's with just these guys. I mean, they finished 1-2 last year in fantasy points, and they were expected to be the safest players on the board, but of course, injuries happen, and it is what it is, and it's been a rough year, so it's just nice to have some positive news to see two of the game's best back into the lineup. I'm going to roll through my favorite picks and props. I got a parlay and a teaser for you as well. Hopefully bounce back from last week's brutal showing. I mean, I could hardly sleep. I was disappointed in myself. Week 7 was so good, 13-3, and then I gave it all back week 8, basically. But I'm sitting here with a 22-16 record overall in this show, so hopefully I can provide a few more winners for you as well. And, you know, when I was thinking about CMC, my Michael Thomas teams are okay. I kind of, you know, weathered the storm a bit, and I need him badly, so I need him to get going here. But my CMC team is brutal. It's 1-7. I left my auction draft with Christian McCaffrey, with Kenny Golladay, and Chris Godwin. And what are you going to do? Injuries are going to happen. That's what I'm talking about. Like, so let's be thankful that we're seeing two studs get back on the football field. If you're an NFL fan, you're loving that. I mean, if you bought low, you're loving that. Been talking about that at FTN Fantasy every single Wednesday to buy low in these guys. Take the risk, especially if you're up near the top of the standings. If you're fighting with somebody and they get Christian McCaffrey and Michael Thomas back on their team, it's a bit of a bummer to you. I understand it. It's a significant boost to them. I get it, but let's not be totally bummed at that situation. You could have a 1-7 squad like me. At least maybe you're fighting for a playoff spot. The reason I bring up that 1-7 squad is twofold. One, injuries suck. And things are going to happen. But two, I've had a lot of questions lately from people who, and I think I usually get them every time this year, right around from week 8 to 10, similar questions. I've been in the DFS community for about 10 years covering daily fantasy sports, and I've always seen a spike in views and in listens, and I usually get a couple of these questions. How do I play DFS? What contest should I choose? What should my strategy be in cash and in tournaments? Should I stack in cash as well as stacking in tournaments? Because I know a lot of people, myself included, we like to game stack. We like to have a wide receiver or two with that quarterback so we can just get all of the points when those touchdowns do occur. But a lot of questions like that. You know, should I spend up at quarterback? Do I spend down all the time at tight end? Or is it just like a brutal position that I always spend up at the top? And how do I go about, you know, rostering a defense? So a lot of questions coming in at this time of the year, and I think they'll continue to come in with you having a team like my CMC team. Unfortunately for you, you're probably maybe 2-6, 1-7. I think that's why I'm getting some of these questions. You don't want your fantasy football season to be over. I get it. You may be a little bit upset that you lost some cash, so hopefully we're here to help you win some of that cash and more back. And I think this will be the show, because if you're sitting on the fence and you're wondering if you should subscribe over at FTN, if you should get a DFS package, well, I think this show will be the reason that you jump off of that fence and head over to ftndaily.com/pricing, and you'll see our NFL DFS season package is the all-time low price. It's at an all-time low price at $99. Use the promo code Meany. You're going to get a bit of a discount there as well on top of that price. So I think this is going to be the episode for you, for those people who have asked the questions. It's going to be heavy DFS on this show today. Yes, I will have those picks and those props, but you know, I got one of the best guests in the business. Luckily, he works at FTN. He is the co-host of FTN NFL Live on Friday nights with Pat Mayo. You can catch him 7:30 Eastern time. He's a 9-time live finalist, 3-time top 6 live final finisher in 2019. My kind of guy, covers all of the sports, so hopefully we're able to have him on this show covering NBA and PGA and baseball. I've done a few baseball shows with him. He's an absolute genius. He really does get it done. He thinks outside the box. He holds himself accountable. He checks a lot of the boxes that I look for, and not just a human being, but in a DFS player as well. It's the lead NFL analyst over at FTN. It's my man, Kyle Murray. I'm super thrilled to be able to bring him on. I know he's a super busy guy. Before I came on here today, I was watching his Murray's model, NFL DFS plays for week 9. Had some team projections in there, some team implied totals, pace of play for every single team. You know, his stacks. He comes out with an article a little bit later on in the week that we'll talk about, I'm sure, between the numbers. Just taking a look at some of the ownership projections and tournaments. It's very key to know this stuff. You want to know it. And to have this handy is certainly, in my opinion, worth the $99, but you're also going to get, with the $99, you're going to get Kyle's ownership projections, who he's feeling, who he's fading, his top tiers, his top stacks. Like, for example, ownership projections. Why is it so important? Christian McCaffrey is as cheap as he's ever been. He's probably going to come with a low ownership, lower than he's ever going to have the rest of the way, most likely. Last year, he was up over the 10K mark on DK. He was flirting with 35, 40, sometimes 50% ownership in tournaments. This week he's projecting at 5%. Now, I think that doubles by the time kickoff on Sunday. But even still, it may be the time to jump on CMC when nobody's on him. Those are the type of things that will help you get the edge in DFS. And whether you're a cash game player or a head-to-head player like myself, I like to just play one-on-one most of the time. Yeah, sure, I like those big payouts. I like the thought process of potentially winning $1 million or 35 grand like my guy David Jones did this past Thursday. But you know, having this package, I think getting those ownership projections, getting the exposures, the cheat sheets of everybody over at FTNDaily.com. It's not just Kyle Murray or myself or David Jones who won the 35K. Javi Prezzillo, you're going to get his must-haves. You're going to get his exposures. He's a GOAT in the industry. He has had a lot of W's on his resume. Fantasy guru Drew won about 175K a couple weeks ago. We have Tugun, who has won 3 Millionaire Makers. We have Kevin Adams, who's had a ton of success and probably the best DFS article in the game. His game-by-game breakdown is absolutely phenomenal. It's fabulous. It's one of my favorite things to do of the week. I can't wait till Sunday mornings, of course, for the football. But I wake up, get my coffee, I read that article, and I just feel like 10 times smarter. Elliot Chris has a lot of stuff, you know, for the cash game players out there. He's got cash game locks, and I'll ask Kyle about this, but that's how I think I would start playing, like, smaller contests. Don't go into contests where, you know, people are playing 150 different lineups. Maybe just go into a contest where 3 max, or maybe just 1 max, or a smaller double up with 50 people in the top 25 get paid. So Elliot's article is phenomenal for those types of players, the cash game locks, and he also has 10 plays projected to be owned in fewer than 10% of tournaments, right? An ownership under 10%, which is another key. He uses Kyle Murray's projections, and away he goes. Derek Brown, lots of great stuff, so you'll have absolutely everything DFS related with that pass. Again, ftndaily.com/pricing. You'll see the pass, $99. Use that promo code MEANIE, and you'll be well on your way. And we are officially on our way here on this show. Kyle Murray's hanging by. Don't worry. We're going to get to him in just a little bit. And I promise you, you're going to love it. And hopefully it is going to be the reason that you join the FTN squad. I'd like the biggest thing. I think I mentioned the exposures I did. I'm excited here today. I'm excited. Like, I'm feeling like Michael Thomas got a practice in on Friday, and he's going to suit up on Sunday. I'm keeping my fingers crossed here. But I think the coolest thing, besides the cheat sheets and the projections, you know, you get our plays, which is nice, but you get to chat to us too. Like, the Discord is lit. It's always bumping. You can ask any question anytime to any expert, and there's a big conversation with all of us, and it's cool. I think I do think it does help out. I think it helps everyone out, mostly, to have that big conversation. Like, it's nice to have the one-on-one, but then you get Kyle jumping in, and or, you know, David Jones jumping in, Javi, you know, a lot of the guys jump in, and then there's a big conversation, and, you know, it's my favorite part of the week, just to have that convo with the FTN sub. So we're always available. You can always reach out. So, like I said, hopefully this is the episode that brings you along to FTN, and hopefully we'll be able to help you win some cash, win some of that season-long entry fee back. And I'm not laughing at you. Trust me. I've been there. I've had the teams. I have a couple of them that are absolutely trash. Like I said, DFS is fun. You can just play whoever you want. You don't have DK Metcalf? You didn't get to draft him this year? What, you were snoozing in the fifth round? I was snoozing myself. But you can play DK Metcalf every single week if you want. That's the cool thing about DFS. Play whoever you want to play whenever, and you don't have to worry about those injuries in case you had a Saquon or a CMC or a Michael Thomas and your team is lost. So head on over to ftndaily.com/pricing. You see the package there. Use that promo code Meanie, and we'll hook you up with a better discount. But I'm telling you, it doesn't get much better than that. This is episode 10 of Mean Streets. Let's get into it. Of course, I know you've been waiting this whole time. Who am I going to dedicate this episode to? Lots of great athletes I could dedicate this episode to. One of my favorite wide receivers in football. And I think he'll go down as one of the best wide receivers to ever do it. Ever. I don't know, Bill O'Brien may not agree with me, but who cares? Because that guy's out to lunch. He traded DeAndre Hopkins, superstar wideout, for David Johnson. No disrespect to DJ, but he didn't even get a first-round pick. That's going to go down as one of the worst trades in NFL history and in all of sports. DeAndre Hopkins traded away for David Johnson, and now Bill O'Brien is at home, jobless, probably not wearing any pants, on his couch, holes in his shirt, hair is a mess. Hopefully not feeling too depressed, let's be honest. I don't wish that on anybody, but he probably got chips on his shoulder, crumbs all over the place, crumbs in his chin. Bad trade. DeAndre Hopkins probably loving it right now with Kyler Murray and the up-and-coming squad that is the Arizona Cardinals. Really looking forward to that Cardinals and Miami Dolphins matchup. We're going to see Tua Tagovailoa up against Kyler Murray, two top quarterbacks in terms of 2018 Heisman voting, 1 and 2. This is going to be the fifth time ever where two quarterbacks who had finished 1 and 2 in Heisman voting in the same year are going to face off against each other in the NFL. So that's pretty cool. The last to do it, Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson. I expect Tua to have to throw the football a little bit more as well. Another wide receiver that wears number 10, they call him Cheetah out of Kansas City. He runs really fast. He talks really fast like me, but he runs faster. And I loved his comment a couple weeks ago. I believe it was last week, yeah, when DK Metcalf ran down Buda Baker. And he said, listen, I could do that too, but my quarterback doesn't turn the ball over. A couple shots fired at Russell Wilson. Patrick Mahomes doesn't really turn the ball over. He made a good point. He took a shot at Russell Wilson. Wilson doesn't turn the ball over that much, but he has had a couple picks inside the red zone that have been pretty costly. One in the Super Bowl, for sure, that I remember watching and being like, no! Had all kinds of money on the Seahawks. Another guy who wears number 10, currently out of the lineup, but still currently playing in the NFL. He's just on IR. He reminds me a little bit of Tyreek Hill, too. And in his prime, he was always among the leaders in yards per catch, yards after the catch, ADOT leaders, the poster boy for boom or bust. You hear high risk, high reward all the time. You hear, oh, he's a best ball guy. Everybody, by the way, can be a best ball guy. But Deshaun Jackson is who I'm talking about. Could give you a zero on any given week or could blow up and give you 35 fantasy points and help you win your week single-handedly. Deshaun Jackson had a lot of game back in the day. He's lost it. He hasn't been able to stay healthy. I said a few episodes that I don't expect really much more from him in his NFL career. Going to hold a soft spot here in my heart. Soft spot for sure. A couple bonehead plays that he had wearing a Birds jersey. I remember the deep pass from Donovan McNabb. It looked like I was going to get about 30 fantasy points on that play, and then he just dropped it on the one and really didn't get a whole lot. Brian Westbrook ran it in from the one after that. That was a bit of a bonehead play. I think he was just a rookie or a sophomore. I think he learned his lesson from then, but I'll always remember the punt return touchdown at the very end, that big comeback game against the Giants. I'll always remember that. And speaking of the New York Giants, Eli Manning also wore number 10. Two Super Bowls. Can't take those away from him, even though those defenses were pretty good. He did beat the New England Patriots, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, Randy Moss, that phenomenal looking like undefeated season, but they couldn't get it done in the Super Bowl. Is that enough to get into the Hall of Fame? Is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer? Giants fans are probably thinking, yeah, you know, should be. I don't know, man. I was looking at some of his statistics. He never, ever once led the league in passing yards or touchdowns, a couple times picks, a couple times sacks. I mean, I don't want to fault him for how he fell off. I mean, he got a little bit older. The Giants stunk. I mean, the offensive line towards the end of his career was brutal. Didn't have a lot of weapons there for him. So, I don't know. I think he gets in, but I'm not sure he deserves it. A couple great number 10s in the NBA. Tim Hardaway, one of my faves, old school G. Sam Cassell, another one. Walt Frazier probably takes the cake, though, let's be honest. I just didn't get to see him play, so I'm not going to dedicate that episode to him. I want to give a shout-out to DeMar DeRozan, player option, looking like he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. Interested to see where he goes. San Antonio didn't really work out for him. He had some moments with the Spurs, but interested to see where he goes. I just wanted to bring him up because the NBA is coming back December 22nd. Exciting. Offseason's it's going to be quick, man. It's going to be different. Draft and free agency, all that good stuff. I know LeBron's not happy. He wants his time off. Well, LeBron, you can rest, bud. You can rest for the first couple months of the season. Lakers will probably be fine. You turn up the gas in the second half, you'll make the playoffs. You'll be all right. Over to the ice, Guy Lafleur, the Flower, 5 cups, Hall of Famer, 6-time All-Stars, or All-Star appearance, 3-time Art Ross winner, 2-time Hart winner, Guy Lafleur. Had to bring up for the old man. Ron Francis wore number 10, of course, and now running the show with the Seattle Kraken. Looking forward to seeing how that expansion runs, if other teams are just going to learn, or if they're going to learn anything from that time with Vegas, right? Oh, here you go. Here's Shea Theodore. You can have him. Oh, William Karlsson and a pick? Have him. Go ahead. Here's Jonathan Marchessault. But by the way, you can also have Riley Smith if you take on Jonathan Marchessault. I think a few teams are going to learn their lessons, but there's also some bad contracts out there. So it's going to be, I'm very interested to see how the Seattle team is going to play out. I like the fact that they got a team, love the logo, love the look, like the anchor. I like a lot about what's going on in Seattle. I may have to get myself a tee. Over to baseball. Actually, no, one more hockey guy I wanted to mention, too. Artemi Panarin, the bread man, and then Pavel Bure, one of my favorites of all time, the Russian Rocket. In 94 as a kid, I remember going to the rink in Vancouver and going to be able to see Pavel Bure. And I think my dad was a little bit more excited than me, but he got benched. Pat Quinn benched him. Didn't really get to see him at all. I guess he wasn't back-checking. Had to go another time when he was a member of the Florida Panthers to see him. I've been fortunate enough to see quite a few hockey games in my day, and I think none better than Pavel Bure. Explosive, a hell of a shot, electrifying, the Russian Rocket. I could watch videos all day from Pavel Bure. On the diamond, Chipper Jones and Gary Sheffield. You know, Gary Sheffield. Every time I, rode to the show and I have to pick my own batting stance, I usually rock Gary Sheffield just for a little bit. I don't know how he was able to get 500-plus bombs and timing it up with that wicked just bat whip, like back and forth. I used to do it all the time as a kid, too, right? My coach told me in Bantam, what are you doing? Stop doing that. Keep your bat still. You don't want to have all that movement. So I don't know how Sheffield did it. I mean, a couple of reasons I think I know why, but nonetheless, 500-plus bombs from Gary Sheffield, one of the better batting stances of all time. But I think I have to dedicate this episode to a soccer player. That's right, a soccer player. It's just so many great soccer players to wear the number 10. A ton. Yeah, of course, Messi stands out. Zidane stands out. Ronaldinho stands out. Pele stands out, a.k.a. Edson Arantes do Nascimento. Did I say that correctly? Because I only call him Pele, let's be honest. But Edson Arantes do Nascimento, I think that was a little bit cleaner. One of the best, probably, arguably, the beautiful game of soccer. An absolute stud. I was one of those kids that always played Brazil growing up, like Super Nintendo and Nintendo. I mean, they were just so good. I just wanted to win, right? It was always Brazil or Nigeria because they were super fast. But Brazil, there's just so many greats on that team. Roberto Carlos, Ronaldinho, Ronaldo, Pele, of course, before my time, didn't get to see him, but I've watched the highlights. I see the back of the soccer card and the resume, and I respect it. But this episode will be dedicated to my guy, Harry Kane, who just scored his 200th goal in his 300th game with Tottenham, the Hotspurs. And the reason why I'm really going this way is because my guy, Albert Vertanian, you can follow him on Twitter, the real Bert V, just joined the FTN squad, a brilliant soccer mind. He's been writing DFS soccer articles for us this week. He has been giving some prize picks. You're going to be able to check him out on the YouTube page. We're going to be pumping up our YouTube page here over the next few weeks, giving out some free prize picks. We have free article at FTNDaily.com Monday to Friday. I get a free one up there right now for NFL picks. So Albert's going to be doing some soccer stuff for us. So Coys. Congratulations, Albert. And more reason to jump onto the squad, FTNDaily.com/pricing. jump on that DFS soccer package. Him and Tristan's killing it, and Albert's going to be a great asset to the team as well. Both of those guys are going to be given picks and DFS plays as well as prize picks as well. All right, let's get into this episode. As I mentioned, Kyle Murray is hanging by, but I just wanted to run through some news, notes, and injuries before we really get into the meat of the show. So, as I said, welcome back, CMC. Michael Thomas, looks like Emmanuel Sanders is going to be back as well. Really looking forward to that Bucks and Saints game. Ezekiel Elliott, hamstring injury. I have a feeling he's not going to play. And maybe that's going to be a good thing for you because it's probably hard to sit Zeke, right? I have him ranked right now as RB21. There's 20 different running backs I would play over him. You can see my rankings over at ftnfantasy.com. Again, use that promo code Amini. It's not just my rankings. You'll be able to see Jeff Ratcliffe and Brad Evans. Let's be honest. Those are the guys that you want to see. But you also got Ryan Noonan and Derek Brown in there as well. But I got Zeke ranked at RB21. This is not good. I think I'd rather see Tony Pollard in there. It looks a little bit fresher. Maybe he can change the mojo a little bit with the Dallas Cowboys. But there are a ton of different running backs that I would play over Zeke. Okay, I'll give you a little bit of a sneak peek. Let's take a look here at the rankings. Who would I play over him? Damian Harris, I'd play over him. Philip Lindsay, I would play over him. Fournette, of course. Swift, Dobbins. I'd play Taylor, even though against the Baltimore Ravens, that's pretty much my cutoff. Justin Jackson, Montgomery, these are guys, Antonio Gibson, you're playing all of those guys over him, but I have some Zeke concerns. He hasn't been good, and now he's not 100% healthy, and he's not even practicing, so just be prepared to maybe potentially see him out, and you need a fallback option there for sure. Chris Carson out, Carlos Hyde out, DJ Dallas, and they just signed Alex Collins off the practice squad. Knows the playbook, familiar with Seattle, played there before. So I don't think it's going to be a full DJ Dallas game, but I do expect him to get the bulk of the touches and the carries inside this offense. He wasn't very good last week. He wasn't efficient, as we talked about on this show, but he still found the end zone twice. It's a good offense. It's a great matchup. It's the highest total game, the Seahawks and the Bills, 55 points. DJ Dallas could find the end zone again. I know he missed a blocking assignment, almost got Russell Wilson killed, but then he got the target on the very next play inside the red zone, and everything was even. It was all good. He made up for it. But I think DJ Dallas is still the guy to own. He caught 5 balls in that offense as well. But the one thing is, Travis Homer's probably going to get a little bit more play too. He just sat on the sidelines last week. He didn't do a whole lot. So, you know, you could be in a really tough spot and you have to start DJ Dallas in season-long leagues. But I think in DFS, he's a pass, but I'll make sure to bring that up with Kyle. Kenyon Drake is out. Matt Breida spent all kinds of money on him, and dude is out. Just another reason to push back your waiver wire into Thursday morning, Wednesday night in the wee hours, just so you get that first practice report. It's tough enough to be guessing if guys are hurt or not, and you don't get the news. Like, there's no news that Matt Breida was dealing with a hamstring injury. Guy had hardly touched the field all season, and then all of a sudden you wake up Wednesday morning and the guy's hurt. He misses a practice, and he's already ruled out. So Miles Gaskin is out. DeAndre Washington's on the COVID list. Nick Bowden is also on the COVID list. So that leaves Jordan Howard and Patrick Laird. Yikes. Jordan Howard's only 4K on DK. He's probably not going to catch a lot of passes, but if you're looking to spend up and spend down, I mean, I may have one lineup with Jordan Howard. Could be a high up-tempo game. He could just fall into a couple catches. That's possible. He's going to get the goal line work. We already know that. He has a couple one-yard scores already. It's not great, but I think he's a borderline top 35 running back this week. So you may just have to play him. Mark Ingram, doubtful. Looking like it's going to be another J.K. Dobbins week and potentially Gus Bus. Like both of those guys this week. It is a tough matchup against the Indianapolis Colts. They've allowed the second fewest rushing yards this season, but they've played brutal teams. They haven't played really anybody good, in my opinion. I like their defense. I respect it. I tweeted, this was my most popular tweet ever. I'd said before the season started that I have like the Colts in a lot of leagues. I just took them last because of their weak schedule to start. And it blew up. A lot of people liked that tweet. They started off very slow in week one. You remember they lost to the Jags, and I think they were dropped en masse, but they've been a top 5 fantasy defense this season. I don't know if I play them this week against Baltimore, but this is going to be an interesting matchup because nobody runs better than the Baltimore Ravens. Dobbins I'd like a little bit more. I think he's got more upside. He had a tough spot last week against Pittsburgh, and he looked really good. Tremaine Pope, who came out of absolutely nowhere, has a concussion, and he's doubtful. So Joshua Kelly lives again, but he is definitely second behind Justin Jackson. That's his backfield. I don't expect Kelly to do a whole lot, but if you need the running back depth, maybe he's just a pickup again. Devonta Freeman, ankle, he's going to be out. I already said Wayne Gallman is the guy to own there, and even that is not all that appealing. Philip Lindsay, toe injury, expected to return. He's looked better. I've been talking about him for a couple weeks now. I've been pushing for him to get more play. Mr. John Elway, do you hear me? Can we get Philip Lindsay a little bit more play, please? Because he's better than Melvin Gordon. And that's a fact. Calvin Ridley, foot, questionable. I don't think he's going to play. There's some reports out of Atlanta that he could, but he hasn't practiced all week. I guess he doesn't need to get out there. I don't know. Everything that I feel, you know, from a source I follow in Inside Injuries is that he's going to be out for a couple weeks. So I don't know. I would have a backup plan there. Maybe Russell Gage, just have somebody close by on your waiver wire or on your bench. Then just be prepared to potentially have to play somebody else than Calvin Ridley. Chris Godwin, finger, he's questionable. It's just, I think it's a pain tolerance thing with him. I believe, you know, it's just all about him. Bruce Arians had some positive things to say. He was catching passes this past week. So I think he's going to play. And I think if you have him, you play him. Sammy Watkins, hamstring, he is out. T.Y. Hilton, doubtful. I was going to bring up T.Y. Kenny Golladay, he is out. Jamal Adams, groin, it looks like he's in. He hasn't played since week three. I think that's good news for his Seattle defense. He's still not playing great football, but looked a little bit better last week. Drake Kirkpatrick, thigh, he's out. So I just want to bring him up because I think Patrick Peterson will now be on Devontae Parker, and I think that's good news for Preston Williams. As I said, I think Tua is going to throw the football a little bit more. Joey Bosa, concussion, doubtful. Matthew Stafford is going to play, so that's positive news for TJ Hawkinson, for Marvin Jones, and for Marvin Hall, who was the deep threat option in the passing attack last week, and he is the deep threat option in this offense with no Kenny Golladay. We're going to see Garrett Gilbert in the lineup for the Dallas Cowboys. It can't be worse, can it? I mean, Ben DiNucci didn't do a whole lot, but man, some of his throws against the Eagles were brutal. They were awful. He could have easily had five picks. He had nine. He got away with a couple. They were running some weird plays, too. It just felt like they didn't trust him. There was a lot of just maybe high school plays ran, some plays that I'd never even heard of. Even the broadcast was talking, but like, what is this play? There was a several plays where there was just direct snap to Zeke or to CeeDee Lamb. So just trying to take the ball out of Ben DiNucci's hands as much as possible. So clearly they don't trust him. And then we got Jake Luton under center for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, you obviously don't play him. I don't think you get too cute and play him in DFS. He's not the best deep ball thrower. He doesn't really handle pressure all that much. Houston should be able to bring it. I would expect they're going to bring it with J.J. Watt and company just because, you know, you're up against a rookie quarterback in his first NFL start. If I were to guess who his guy would be, and I think they just try to keep things simple for Luton this week, and that's probably running the football with James Robinson, a few dump-offs. He's been a big player in the passing game. So I think we'll probably see a lot of James Robinson and just maybe some Keelan Cole or Laviska Shenault. I don't know. Like, you would expect DJ Chark, but he's a deep threat guy. He's going to have the tough cornerback matchup, and, you know, you can move some of these guys like Shenault and Keelan Cole around the field, you know, some bubble screens and just some quick, easy, you know, throws, quick slants, you know, things like that, where just make life easy for Jake Luton in his first NFL start. That's all of the news and notes. Golden Tate actually is another guy that it doesn't look like he's going to play, but you're not playing him anyways, let's be honest. So let's get into some of the picks before we bring in Kyle Murray. Against the spread, I'm going with some favorites here, some heavy favorites. I got the Chiefs at 10 points. There's not really much to say here. I just think that they're the better team out of these two teams, obviously. I mean, they're playing Carolina. The Panthers have looked decent. They lost to the Falcons last week. You're going to get CMC back. It's good for the offense. But the Chiefs are just, you know, it's KC. I just think that they win by double-digit points. I usually take them all the time when it's between 7 and 10, depending on who the matchup is. And we may have to sweat it out with some backdoor cover, but they're at home here, and I think they win by 10 points. This one here, Pittsburgh 14, this could jump up to 15, 15 and a half. It could get real crazy. I don't know if I would go much higher than 14. There is that threat of the backdoor cover, but I just don't feel like Dallas is going to be able to do anything at all against the Steelers defense. And, you know, they're coming off that big win against the Ravens. They're, you know, sometimes these games could be trap games. They could just be, you know, an emotional win, and then they're coming into this game against the Cowboys, the worst defense in football, and you're just assuming that you're going to win with ease. But it's the defense that I like so much that I just feel like the Steelers are probably definitely going to score 30 points. You know, Big Ben's probably going to toss a couple. James Conner's going to be able to run all over them. Defense may add a couple scores. And will Dallas get to 14? Probably not. But one reason you need to follow FTN Alerts, I got this at 9.5 when it opened up on Monday morning, and believe you, I jumped on it immediately. So I feel a lot better at 10. You can tease it down if you want, but I think they win by two scores. And then I got Houston in there to win by a touchdown. I really like Deshaun Watson this week a lot. I think he could potentially be popular in DFS, but I don't think that really matters at the quarterback position. It just checks all the boxes for me. Jacksonville's just not a great defensive team. And, you know, coming off the bye, they've been a lot better since they got rid of Bill O'Brien and since he's been at home watching on the couch. But so win by a touchdown. I think they do that. These division games are tough. Sometimes they're a lot tighter than, you know, that 7-point spread would suggest. But I'm going to side with Houston here. I think that they easily get to about 28, 30 points. And I don't know with Luton under center that, you know, they're going to be able to get to, 20, 30 points themselves. So I'm going to ride with those heavy favorites on the slate for the against the spread. Over on the money line, I like Seattle. I just think they're the better team. I just don't think that they lose to the Buffalo Bills. I think it'll be tight. I was going to come in here and pick the spread -3, but I decided just to take a little bit of value there on the money line. You usually don't get these kind of odds with Seattle. They're a really good team. Russell Wilson, by the way, has never played in Buffalo. I thought that was pretty interesting. Not going to have a lot of fans there. It seems like the weather is going to be decent, not as crazy as last week. And I just think this is going to be a shootout, but I think Russell Wilson gets the job done. Baltimore on the money line. I have some slight concerns with the COVID and a few players potentially not playing. It looks like they could be without a linebacker or two. We'll see tests happening on Sunday morning. We'll see if those guys can get into the lineup. But I just think they're the better team, better than the Colts. Colts defense has been phenomenal. But what I alluded to earlier is that they just haven't. I just don't think that they played anybody spectacular. Like, I think they're a playoff team. I had them to win the division. I'm not surprised that they're off to a good start. I'm a little bit surprised in how they're running their backfield, even though I shouldn't be, knowing Frank Reich and what he did in Philadelphia, rotating all the backs. But I think this is a bounce-back game for Lamar Jackson. They really probably should have won against the Steelers last week. Lamar had a couple turnovers, kind of gave that game away. But I think Baltimore bounces back here. And this line has flipped all over the place. I jumped on it -3 early. I think before I came on, it was close to a pick 'em. But I think they win, and that's why I'm going to pick them on the money line. Much like Seattle, usually don't get these really good teams, top five teams in the NFL. I think both of them are. And, you know, usually don't get them with these good of odds. And I think they're better than their opponents. The Vikings are the last team in there as well. I was a little bit on the fence with this one. Another one that I was thinking maybe spread, but I wasn't sure about Matthew Stafford if he was going to play, but it looks like he is going to suit up. All reports indicate anyways that he's going to suit up. It just needs another negative test, and, you know, fingers crossed that does happen. But I think that, you know, with Dalvin Cook, they're just going to be able to run all over Detroit. No Kenny Golladay, and this Lions team is just another year, right? It was disappointing. I know expectations are not high, but they just never seem to be able to win that game, that big game. So I'm going to lean with Minnesota. Big win last week against the Green Bay Packers. These over-unders, I'll be honest with you, I was a little torn on some of these totals. I originally wanted to come in with the under between the Bears and the Titans. It was at 47. I just don't expect a ton of offense from either team. But then the Titans' defense has been so brutal that Nick Foles may actually be able to have a little bit of success. So I didn't want to go with that one. And then I was looking at the Patriots and the Jets at 42. I don't think that the Jets get to 14 points. The Patriots haven't showed us anything offensively. That's a game that I do feel like the under will hit, but I wanted to try to give some safer plays and some winners. Like, 42 is tough to take the under. It's very low. I will be taking it in my own pool, but I was just a little hesitant to come in with that total. I jumped around quite a bit with the over-unders, but I've settled in. I have Seattle and Buffalo over 45.5. I think it's going to be a shootout. As I said earlier, I just think both quarterbacks are going to be able to have a lot of success in this game. Seattle is just allowing a ton of yards through the air, the most in football. Denver and Atlanta, I really would like to see Calvin Ridley suit up. This one may actually drop down to 49 or 48 and a half before kickoff, especially if Calvin Ridley doesn't suit up. So that is a little worrisome to me. I'd like to see Ridley. He's top six in the NFL in receiving yards. But this is a really good matchup for Denver. They came back last week. They were down, I think, 24-10 in the third quarter. Drew Lock had his best game of the season, maybe the best game of his career, three passing touchdowns, had the touchdown at the very end of the game. And the Falcons just, they're brutal. More on them in a little bit. But the defense is bad. It's not good. And then Vegas and the Chargers, 51.5. This is a high total. The Chargers play, like, I thought coming into the year that they play at a bit of a slower pace, and Vegas, that's what they want to do. They want to run the rock, and you saw it last week that they had, 31 carries. They gave 31 carries to Josh Jacobs. They really didn't give the football over to Cleveland. I just think that this is going to be a little bit of a different game. The weather's not going to be as bad. Justin Herbert is chucking the ball a ton, like 43 attempts in each of his past two games. He's been super efficient. This is a defense you can throw on in Vegas, and it's a defense you can throw on against the Chargers too. If it just starts to get into that type of shootout, we have some big play threats with Henry Ruggs and Mike Williams. We have two tight ends who can play. I think both teams will have success running the football. So I think there's going to be a lot of points scored in this matchup. So I'm willing to take the over at 51.5. Let's bring up some of my props. I got Tyler Lockett at 68.5. I just feel like again, there's going to be a lot of points scored. It seems like Lockett and Metcalf flip-flop every single week, but Tre'Davious White is going to be on DK Metcalf, so I think Lockett will probably be able to eat up the Bills. You'll get a lot of crossing routes out of him, some easy completions. They've really struggled against wide receivers in the slot. Sometimes he gets a little bit of a slot usage out of Tyler Lockett as well. So 68.5, I think we'll get there. Will Fuller over 61.5. I think he'll get there as well. My one fear is that it's Brandon Cooks. Cooks had that big monster game against Jacksonville. But the Jags have allowed the fifth most passing yards per game. They have the worst pass DVOA defense in the league. Top 10 in passing touchdowns allowed. Top 10 in 20-yard passing plays allowed. Fourth most fantasy points to quarterbacks. Wideouts, I was taking a look at wideouts. They have at least 80 yards against them in four straight games. So at least one wide receiver has topped the 80-yard mark against Jacksonville in four straight games. So I think it's a good opportunity. You want to jump in on Cooks. You want to jump in on Fuller. I think both of those guys could, hit the over on their yardage prop. But I think Fuller is a little bit safer. He's been the deep threat guy, getting a lot of the volume. Over to Darren Waller, over 4.5 catches. Waller leads all tight ends in targets per game, 8.7, 6.4 catches per game. He's got a 26% target share, which is top 10 in all of football and number one at the tight end position. So last week, he didn't have the best game, but again, it was the weather. I think this is a little bit more up-tempo, and I think he definitely gets to that five-catch mark, especially if this does get into a shootout. Derek Carr spreads the ball around, but he also, zones in on Darren Waller. It's Waller's the guy who gets the double-digit targets, and then everybody else is just getting a handful. But I expect Waller, as I said, that a 26% target share is pretty significant. Jerry Jeudy over 3.5 grabs. This is just too low. I was pretty confused why. Tim Patrick is going to return, but Jerry Jeudy had himself, a pretty solid game last week. He had a season high in terms of yards, over 70. He had 10 targets. A lot of that came in the third quarter and into the fourth quarter when Drew Lock was really balling out at the very end. That's not a sentence that you hear me say too often. But Jerry Jeudy, 3.5 grabs against this Falcons defense. This Falcons team has just been, they've been brutal. They've all over the board, they've just allowed so many big plays, the most 20-yard plays in all of football, 39 of them, which is great for Jerry Jeudy. And, he moved out on the outside last week. KJ Hamler was in the slot, but I think we'll see KJ Hamler in the slot, maybe Jeudy on the other side, Patrick on the other side of that. I don't think it hurts too much with, having Patrick in the lineup. I think he just gets to four catches. And, the Falcons have allowed 111 catches to wide receivers, the sixth highest mark in all of football. I just feel like this number is too low in a game where we could see 50 points. And if you just look at the Falcons overall, from their defense, 29th in pass DVOA. I mentioned the most 20-yard passing plays, 39. They've allowed the second most passing yards per game, the most passing touchdowns. So this is a pretty good spot for Drew Lock and company. And I like Drew Lock in fantasy this week. I like Noah Fant. There was two I was coming in here with, Jeudy 3.5 and Fant 4.5. I took Fant off of there, but nobody has allowed more catches, yards, and touchdowns to tight ends than the Atlanta Falcons. So if you feel more comfortable with the 4.5, it's two more catches or one more grab. Similar odds, 154, minus 154 DraftKings and minus 167 BetMGM. So you're going to get the better odds with Noah Fant, but I think both get there. I think that Drew Lock is going to be able to have one of his better games against this leaky Falcons defense. And then the last one there is Stephon Diggs, 70.6 receiving yards. Again, a shootout. Diggs leads the NFL with 79 targets. He's second in catches with 54 as well in yards with 695. Seattle looked a little bit better last week, as I mentioned, but they still have allowed a league-high 358 passing yards per game and the most 40-yard passing plays in the NFL. Seattle has allowed 57 fantasy points per game. 14 different wide receivers have topped the 70-yard mark against the Seattle Seahawks. I'm just going to run through it quickly. Week 1, Ridley, 130. Jones, 157. Gage, 114. So all three Atlanta wideouts topped 100 yards. Julian Edelman, week 2, hadn't done anything all year, 179. Damir Bird, 72. N'Keal Harry, 72. What have those guys done since that? Week 3, Cedric Wilson, 107. Michael Gallup, 138. Amari Cooper, 86. CeeDee Lamb, 65. Week 4, Devontae Parker, 110. Isaiah Ford, 48. Jakeem Grant got in on the fun, 36. Week 5, Adam Thielen, 80. Week 7, DeAndre Hopkins, 103. Heck, Larry Fitzgerald at 62. Week 8, 91 from Brandon Ayuk and 81 from Kendrick Bourne. Diggs may get this in the first half. He may set records, right? Should be an entertaining game, nonetheless. All right, before we bring in my guy, Kyle Murray, I just want to give a shout-out to pristineauction.com. Daily auctions, $1 starting bids at over 1,000 items, always up for grabs. They have signed helmets, balls, jerseys. If you're a collector, if you like to collect football items, this is the site for you. Over 8,000 football items in their auction at all time. Authenticity is guaranteed on all products. And if you use that promo code FTN, you're going to get yourself $10 off your first invoice. I'm pleased to bring in the guests today on Mean Streets, the lead DFS analyst over at FTN, 9-time live finalist, 3-time top 6 live final. Finishes in 2019 alone. I have been talking about this guy since episode 1 of Mean Street, so I'm super thrilled to be able to bring him in. Give him a follow on Twitter, KMurrDFS. It's Kyle Murray. What's going on, my man?
Yeah, man, it's great to be here. You've had a lot of great guests, so I'm excited to kind of follow up, and hopefully I can live up to some high expectations because you've had a lot of great shows, so I'm pumped to do this with you and kind of have a good week of NFL.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. And honestly, not just try to pump your tires, and I will probably do that a lot on this show here today, but I've had a lot of people just reach out over the past couple of weeks. Their season-long teams are absolutely finished. You know, there's been so many injuries and dealing with COVID, and they want to keep playing fantasy football, and they're just new to DFS, and I just keep saying, man, Kyle Murray, are you not checking out the stuff over at FTNDaily.com? And I just checked out your Murray's model DFS plays for week 9. You really just dive deep into it. I love it. You're talking, you know, your favorite stacks, team projections, pace of play. I don't want to give everything away from there. I encourage everybody to check out FTNDaily.com. Check out your Between the Numbers, where you really just position tiers, your favorite stacks, guys you're fading. And Kyle, as you know, NFL season pass is only $99. So for like the prices drop down, like this is the time to jump in. And you know, week 17, nobody wants to play season long in week 17. You shouldn't be playing. You can play week 17 DFS. You can play playoff DFS. People who sign up, you're going to get your ownership projections, who you're feeling, your exposures. And most of all, an opportunity to talk to you in the Discord chat, which is absolutely lit, right?
Yeah, it's we pretty much have at least one minimum expert in there at 24/7, because you know, Javi's on the West Coast. I'm nocturnal. I pretty much stay up all night. So
yes, I noticed that.
The way it works out, we pretty much have somebody in that Discord pretty much 24/7. But yeah, we have a ton of awesome content, and like my model video sometimes runs a little bit long. This week it was an hour long because, like you mentioned, I do try to go pretty in depth position by position. And the article that I write, it's cool because we have so many guys that provide such great content and picks. It allows me to kind of take a different angle on the article. I talk pretty much about ownership, about what I'm doing with leverage and game strategy throughout that week. So I really enjoy doing that article, and that'll be up tomorrow morning, Saturday morning. So that's probably one of my favorite things to do throughout the week.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to check out. I love the ownership projection, and I feel like you think outside the box a little bit too. And just before we get into some plays, and like I said, not going to just take up too much of your time here. I want everybody to go check out your work. And also, you're going to join Pat Mayo. You join him every Friday night, FTN Live on Friday nights with Pat Mayo. That's a great conversation between you two and D-Bro, and sometimes Javi's on there and Jones. And also Sunday mornings, check out Kyle as well. Just a nice little combination between all of you guys. And as you said, there's a lot of great minds over at FTN, and the chats are just, they're very active. And I think that's one of the most underrated things about having this pass. You're not just going to get Kyle's great work, but you're going to get everybody access to everybody's work and exposures, cheat sheets, you know, who they're playing. It really just, you're not just saying, yeah, I'm playing this guy. You're actually, you know, telling the people that you're playing them too. Right. Yeah. So the exposures are there, and I think that's pretty key. So before we get into a few plays, I'm going to kind of run through game by game and just get your thoughts on certain games, and we'll skip over a couple. But Vegas is, I'm seeing right now there's six games with totals of at least 50 points. So we could have some high scoring games. Last week was crazy, as you know, with some of the wind. And that's another thing that I like about your video is, like, you hold yourself accountable. If something goes wrong and some, you know, you explain why it went wrong, what your thinking was there, and how we can, you know, move forward and make adjustments along the way. So for people who are just checking out for the first time, honestly, there are some people who have never played DFS that have asked those questions to me before. Is there any sort of tips? Maybe it's, you know, certain contests that you like to play or avoid, or just taking a look at team totals. Is there anything that you can just give the viewers, give the listeners a little bit of a tip?
Yeah, first of all, I mean, I am in that same boat with some of the season long players. I have my main league with all my good friends. I'm 2-6 in that one, so I'm kind of just fed up with it. So I'm in that same boat where I'm pretty much just DFS at this point. But yeah, a main thing is you want to have realistic expectations for DFS. It's not a game that is very easily, it doesn't come easily, and it's hard to win. And when you find contests that kind of fit what you're trying to accomplish, it's very important. So one thing I always encourage is to try to find, obviously, contests that fit your bankrolls. You don't want to go broke doing this. You want to be able to play within a realm of, you know, realistic expectations, but keep the contest size as small as you can. Give yourself the best chance to win. If you're throwing, obviously, people are going to see, oh, there's $1 million to the winner in this contest. That's really intriguing. Those contests are very hard to win, almost impossible. So especially if you're doing 1, 2, 3 lineups, be realistic with it. Try to find contests that kind of fit that for you. 500 people, 400 people. There's plenty of contests in the NFL streets where you can find all kinds with high prize pools, low prize pools, all that stuff. So just try to find the right contest and try to keep it as small as you can in terms of people that you're competing against to start.
I like that. Yeah. And you know, I love the big screenshots, and we had our guy David Jones last night. What, win 35K? Yeah. Like, man, there's a lot of great minds over at FTN. Yeah. But I'm a cash game player. That's a little boring, honestly. Like, I like the big prize payouts, and I dabble a little bit into those. But we'll start here with the Chiefs and Carolina. And you know, last week I played in, I think it was 8 head to heads, and not one person had Mahomes. And there was only 2 Tyreek Hill and 1 Travis Kelce. And I'll be honest, I was all in on that stack in KC. I thought it was getting overlooked, and I just tried not to overthink it. Kyle was like, it's the Jets. It's the Jets. They're going to score points. Now, a great matchup against Carolina this week. How do you treat this game? Because I look at Tyreek Hill, and we really haven't seen that blow up game. Like, like the 30 point showings, he's got 7 touchdowns on the season, but it's usually only 4 or 5 grabs. He's yet to hit the century mark. How do you treat this contest at all, or this game? And do you feel like there is something to be said about Clyde Edwards-Helaire after, you know, you got Lev Bell there as somebody who potentially could get overlooked this week? And, you know, the Panthers are just, they don't have a great defense.
Yeah, based on what we've seen from the Panthers, they've really struggled to defend the run. And I think the reason why they might look a little bit better in comparison to the pass is because teams have been able to run all over them. I think the Kansas City thing from last week, it was a unique spot because Vegas was saying, hey, they're going to score 35 points, which they did. And that's unique because a lot of times if someone's projected to score 35 points by Vegas, we should be all over them. But the blowout kind of pushed people away. And I don't feel like that's going to be a thing again. When you're talking about Tyreek Hill, I'm with you. It's really hard to play him over guys like Hopkins, even Stephon Diggs, Lockett, Metcalf, because the volume isn't going to be there consistently. But when you're talking about pairing him with Mahomes, the volume kind of goes out the window because you're just looking for those big explosive plays. So in a world where I'm playing the Chiefs, it's typically only stacking because they're expensive. So when you're talking about that one of them hitting their ceiling, mostly you're going to start with Mahomes. So if Mahomes is going to hit his ceiling, it's probably going to come through 3-4 passing touchdowns. And if that happens, you're probably looking at Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, maybe even one of the ancillary pieces getting involved. We might have Sammy Watkins back this week, so that kind of muddies the water a little bit. But one thing to note about the receivers over there is Mecole Hardman actually finally been waiting on this for 2 years, surpassed Robinson in snaps played. So last week I was actually on Robinson a pretty good amount. And I got kind of lucky with the touchdown because he didn't play as much as I had expected. And the 2 weeks prior to that with Sammy Watkins out, he played over 70% of the snaps. And last week it flip-flopped with Hardman playing over 70% of the snaps. So that's something to note. If Watkins were to sit, I think Hardman could be an interesting play. He's an explosive player, but for me, I'm probably not getting too much of this Kansas City game unless I'm stacking them, because all of their ceilings, you kind of have to have really massive blow-up games for them to really capture a ton of ceilings in tournaments. And when you're talking about cash games or more optimal plays, you can find other options that I think have similar ceilings, and you're getting a much better discount on price tag.
Yeah, these guys are all going to put a huge hole in your wallet. So yeah, you'll have a much better balanced team if you are just going to go that cash game route or head-to-head route. I agree with you 100%. I just want to touch on CMC quickly. He is the most expensive running back on DraftKings 8.5. It looks like he's going to play. Do you dare go in his first game back in weeks, or is it just too rich for your blood?
It's an interesting opportunity from a tournament perspective, because we're getting CMC at a price tag that, when we're talking about him last year in his historic year, he was at one point he was 10-3 last year. Yeah. So he's almost $2,000 cheaper than he was last year. Based on what we saw in his first two games or before he got hurt, doesn't really look like he's going to have that impactful passing role where he was almost at a 20% target share last year. He had a 12% target share in games that he played so far this year, so probably won't be as high and highly involved in the passing game, but it's Christian McCaffrey. He's still going to get his work in the passing game. So I think it's a very unique opportunity. I assume he's not going to be, full go because he had a 7-week absence, but it's a unique opportunity because you're getting him at almost a $2,000 discount if you're thinking about last year, and you're getting him at an ownership discount because I have him at about 5% projected ownership right now, which I would probably argue to say that this is going to be the last time we have Christian McCaffrey at this kind of ownership.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's move over to Seattle and Buffalo, one of the highest totals. I believe it is the highest at 55. There's lots to like about this game. I mean, the Seahawks they got their defense together a little bit last week. Maybe that was a bit more on Jimmy Garoppolo just struggling because Nick Mullins came in, and that game was out of hand, but he was able to have a lot of success on that secondary. We know Jamal Adams is going to come back for the Seahawks, but they've allowed the most passing yards per game. I can't get off of Lockett. Or on the other side of that game with Diggs, I think both of those guys are in smash spots. And DK Metcalf has been great, but one of the great tools that we have, and several tools over at FTN Daily and Bets and Fantasy.com, is the wide receiver cornerback matchup tool. Tre'Davious White is probably going to be on DK Metcalf. Is this a Lockett week? And are you game stacking here in between these two teams? Because there seems to be a lot to love.
Yeah, so I love this game. When I do a stat grader every week, which is basically just a formula that puts together a bunch of my favorite numbers and stats from different perspectives of stacking, and Buffalo's at number 2 and Seattle's at number 4 in the stack grader. So it's a game that I'm going to have a lot of interest in. I prefer to start with the Buffalo side, so I'll start with Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs just because I feel more comfortable knowing where Josh Allen's going to be putting the ball. Obviously, John Brown, Cole Beasley, they're going to have some involvement, but when you're talking about the guy there, it's Diggs, and when you're talking about the guy in Seattle, we've seen it all year. It kind of bounces back and forth. I think this week is unique with the Seattle guys because this is the first time we've had over a $1,000 difference. We're at $1,000 difference exactly, with Lockett being $6,800 and Metcalf being $7,800. But we're also going to have a massive ownership difference, and that's going to be, I have Lockett at about 21%, while I have DK Metcalf at 8%. And obviously, we saw the game-breaking ability that DK Metcalf has. He did it last week. And Tre'Davious White's a great player, but no doubt DK Metcalf can beat him. Mm-hmm. So I think when you're talking about the better play, it's probably Lockett on paper because he's so cheap. I think $6,800 for a guy who we just saw go for, 97 fantasy points two weeks ago on Sunday night or whatever it was. It's really hard to believe that a guy that just did that is $6,800. But he's going to be very chalky. I have him as the most popular receiver on the slate. But I do think he's probably the most optimal receiver because, like you mentioned, he has the better matchup of the two Seattle guys. It's a great game, and he's just underpriced. So in tournaments, I think DK Metcalf's a very strong play, but I still do give Lockett the slight edge with the matchup and the price discount.
Do you have any love for DJ Dallas at all? He wasn't super efficient last week. Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson already ruled out. I mean, he's 5,000 on DraftKings. The matchup is okay. He got the couple red zone opportunities. He almost
you know, got Russell Wilson killed in one play, and then the next play he handed it off to him and they got the touchdown, and Russell had a little bit of a smirk on his face. But any love there for him or Zach Moss, or is that just too crowded of a backfield in Buffalo? Because Moss is getting some red zone opportunities as well, but Singletary is still hanging around.
Yeah, I think it's another unique spot because these are two teams with over 26 implied team totals. So you should have some interest in the running backs. But like you mentioned, it's kind of a mess. Now we are hearing that Alex Collins could potentially be involved. Yeah. Pete Carroll, I think it was like a half hour ago, said that they'd be fine giving him the ball, which makes some sense. He was on Seattle a couple of years ago, so he probably knows the offense fairly well. And then Travis Homer, who was active last week, but it was just an emergency guy, which Jay Glazer actually nailed that. So it was a good call by him. But I feel like Homer could potentially cut into some of the work here, especially in the passing game. We saw DJ Dallas catch 5 passes last week, including a receiving touchdown. If Homer plays, I don't know how likely that volume is to remain consistent. So I'd be thinking that DJ Dallas is probably a little bit of a trap, or definitely not as safe of a play now with Alex Collins and Homer being involved. And as for the Buffalo guys, yeah, I just can't really find myself getting there because now Moss is more expensive than Singletary. And there it's just, I have no idea what's going to happen. We saw Moss score twice. So if Moss is going to continue to be the goal line guy, that's great. But also you're really looking at him as from a limited opportunity perspective. And then sometimes even when you get down there, it doesn't really matter because Josh Allen's just going to keep it himself. So I prefer just to stick with the passing games for both of these teams.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. You know, over to Denver and Atlanta, and I can't believe this. This is why I don't win thousands of dollars. I like Drew Lock. I sometimes find myself spending down at the quarterback position. I think you can, you know, sometimes you can make a case for spending up like Mahomes. You get low ownership. It's almost like the contrarian move to spend all the way up at the quarterback spot. But 5-2 against these Atlanta Falcons. And I was writing up some FanDuel plays over at FTNDaily.com. And all the numbers, I'm not breaking news here, but they check all these boxes, Kyle. And Locke coming off 3 touchdowns last week. Atlanta allowing the second most yards per game, passing yards. A league-high 20 passing touchdowns, 39 plays of at least 20 yards, the most fantasy points to quarterbacks, 29th in pass DVOA. Am I crazy here to consider Locke? I love Noah Fant. Tim Patrick probably going to return here. He's been the deep threat guy in this offense, and Jerry Jeudy only at 4-7. I just feel like there's a lot to like with this Denver team, and if there's no Calvin Ridley, how can I come off Julio Jones? This guy's a target monster. If we're just looking at a wide receiver to get double-digit targets, he's the first guy that comes to my mind.
Yeah, I recently just ruled out Ridley in the projections. I was kind of tapering back and forth if he was going to play or not, and the projection on Julio's targets when I took Ridley out jumped up like 4 targets. So I'm with you. I have him at about 13 targets right now, which is high, but it feels like that's just going to be what they have to do, really, if Ridley does sit. But I'm with you. I really like Locke as well. When I'm looking at my projections, he is the second highest point per dollar play, which is basically his projected score divided by his salary, just to find a metric to see who's the best player based on their salary. And Deshaun Watson is number one, but Drew Locke is number two this week. So I really like Locke. And when we're going back to a guy like McCaffrey, when we're talking about a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, these are high price players that are going to be pretty low owned. And by playing Locke, you're obviously probably going to be wanting Julio in that lineup to capture some correlation. But by playing Locke, you're saving a lot of money, giving yourself opportunity to spend up elsewhere. And when you're spending up other positions, there's some low-owned guys like McCaffrey, like Hopkins, like even Travis Kelce, who I have at about 12% projected ownership right now. So I'm loving the Locke stack. I definitely love it on FanDuel. Like you mentioned, Fant. I love Fant this week. I think he's a very strong play. I think there are a handful of good plays at tight end. So if you don't want to play Fant, I really like Patrick and Jerry Jeudy as well.
Yeah, okay. I agree. There are a lot of plays at the tight end position. I can't get off of just the past couple of weeks with Fant, you know, double digit targets, and overall, I mean, points per game, he's right there, like top five and catches and targets. He's certainly checked out pretty well. Baltimore and Indy, I don't think we have to spend too much time here on these. I don't think we're getting crazy with Jonathan Taylor, and you want to get ultra contrarian. That's probably the way to go, but I wouldn't do it. I just wanted to touch on the big three with Baltimore, the squeaky wheel thing, Marquise Brown. I wouldn't be shocked if he had 3 or 4 targets on the first drive for Baltimore. I feel like all year I've been saying, you know, in season long, buy low on Lamar Jackson, buy low on Mark Andrews, go buy Marquise Brown. These guys have great season long fantasy football schedules, and they've been low owned really for, I don't know, I feel like 5 weeks. There's times where I've spent, you know, up at the top for them, and I'm expecting them to be low owned, and they're low owned, and they're not really doing anything. So Are we just forgetting about that game in general? Do you have any love for Lamar and Marquise to hook up this week? And do you feel like that's going to be an underrated stack? Or because Marquise is speaking up and Lamar is saying, yeah, I got to get him the ball, it's on me. Do you feel like a lot of people will probably just, okay, this is going to happen, I'm going to put my chips in on this offense?
Yeah, I haven't really played this offense much at all this year. They've been expensive, and they were pretty low owned throughout the past 2 or 3 weeks. But you're finally at a spot where I'm okay with this price tag on Lamar. Obviously, he has a ceiling that many don't have because of the rushing upside. He's obviously, if you're going to pick a quarterback to go out and get 100 rushing yards, it's going to be him every single week if you had to take one. And it's not the greatest of matchups, but it's still a very good offense. We saw this team produced extremely well on the ground last week in a tough matchup against Pittsburgh. So I'm liking Lamar Jackson. I don't know how much I like Marquise Brown just because at the price tag, he's still 6K. I still feel like that price tag is a little bit too high. And it's at a point where if he makes a big play, sure, he's looking okay. You probably won't lose you the week if he's in your lineup, but you need more than just a big play at 6K. You need him to, have consistent volume. And obviously, he hasn't had that. That's why he took to Twitter to complain about it. And there is a squeaky wheel narrative there. So I could potentially see them looking to get him going. But I actually would prefer to just stack him up with Mark Andrews at 4,800. A price tag for this guy is just, I just think it's too cheap and nobody's playing him. I have him at about 4% projected ownership. So pairing Lamar with Mark Andrews, you're talking about a tight end. Mark Andrews, you're not really having the opportunity cost of taking up a receiver spot if you play Marquise Brown. And if Mark Andrews does just catch a touchdown, maybe even catches two, that's really all you need to really get a good ceiling game from Mark Andrews. So I really like pairing Lamar with Mark Andrews. And then if you don't like the passing attack here, I'm pretty interested in J.K. Dobbins this week. I think he's going to be extremely low-owned. I have him at about 3% projected ownership right now. He saw 65% of the snaps last week. He is their third down back. He didn't get the goal line work, but I don't want to necessarily rule it out. Like week one, we saw J.K. Dobbins get the goal line work with Mark Ingram there. So obviously that was a long time ago, but and Gus Edwards got the touchdown last week. But I don't want to necessarily just cross that off the realm of possibilities for J.K. Dobbins. I think he's going to lead the team in snaps from the running back position. He'll have more involvement in the passing game. And I think he could potentially be even or even get more work than Gus Edwards. And when you're talking about this team, they're going to run the ball, a minimum of 30 times each week. Yeah. So at that rate, all these guys are guaranteed double digit touches. So I like Dobbins a little bit in terms of just a GPP play.
Yeah, you know what? I really like that call. No Ingram again. And I think a lot of people will just look at maybe the matchup and they'll see, the Colts are pretty stingy run defense. They see that ninth opponent rank right there. And they just think, okay, well, actually it's third opponent rank. And I like the Colts defense, but who have they played? I mean, they play in a very weak division. I'm like Jacksonville, Mini, Jets, Chicago, Cleveland, Cincy, Detroit. This team hasn't played anyone all that great. So I nobody runs the ball more. I think the Rams maybe, but this is the number one rushing team in the NFL. So I really like that Dobbins call. I wanted to bring him up. Over to Houston and Jacksonville. This could be a fun game, but can Jacksonville do their part, right? Because Watson has a great matchup. Will Fuller, we know his upside. Even David Johnson could probably do some damage. I think that Houston could easily get to 30 points, but I would like Jacksonville to be able to do their part and keep this a competitive game to be able to, continue to see Deshaun Watson throw. Over the past three games, he's been running again. Obviously, if you've been following this Houston team and you've been following, what Bill O'Brien has done with them over the past couple of years. Now that he's gone, it seems like it's just a weight lifted off Watson's shoulder just a little bit. He's been much better over the past couple of weeks. Do you like Watson? He's not going to be cheap. You're really going to have to. I mean, 7-1 is pretty decent, I guess. Over on FanDuel, I thought he was a bit of a value over there. But do you have any concern with Jacksonville on the other side? Because Jake Luton is, I don't think he's a guy that's going to be able to have a lot of success this weekend.
Yeah, I'm with you. That it was a concern of mine. And during my Murray's model video, it's kind of cool because I walked through it and I pretty much start the stacks and then work through positions. And when I was talking about the Houston stack, I mentioned initially, I think they're a great play. Vegas has them at about 28, 29 points. And it kind of felt like this game was going to be fairly popular. And I was concerned about Jacksonville being able to keep up, like you mentioned. But I'm kind of getting Kansas City vibes from last week where the ownership isn't really all that high in them. We have none of these receivers over 10% ownership. I do think David Johnson's getting some ownership. I have him at about 13% last I checked. Yeah, 13.2. And I have Watson at about 11%, but the ownership at quarterback doesn't really matter too much. It's pretty good. It's pretty much going to be pretty balanced.
Right.
So I'm feeling like people are potentially off of this game more so because of maybe Fuller's a little bit more expensive than they would like. Maybe Brandon Cook's a little bit more expensive than they would like, but also they're potentially worried about where this offense is going to get their points from and if they're going to be able to be forced to keep up. And looking at ratios of touchdowns compared to passing and rushing, Texans are top three in terms of what they're doing in the red zone. They're passing at the third highest rate in the red zone, and they're scoring. When they score, it's pretty much via the air. They're not really getting a lot of rushing touchdowns. We've seen it from David Johnson. He scored last week, but it was via the pass. So Deshaun Watson is pretty much their source of points. And when you're looking at that, it's kind of what you want from a stack. You want a team that's getting a lot of their scoring coming from the passing game. And for that reason, I think Houston's a very strong play. Like, Vegas is projecting them to score 4 touchdowns at 28, 29 points. So at that rate, even if you give David Johnson 1 rushing touchdown, you have, what, 3 touchdowns available left for this passing attack. And I think Watson can definitely get those 3. If not, maybe he'll get one on the ground. So I'm still on this Houston team. They're number 1 in my stack rating model. So nice. I'm pretty high on Houston. The issue is finding who you want to bring it back with the Jaguars, because like you mentioned, I'm a little concerned about Jake Luton. Don't really know a lot about him. I believe he went to Oregon State, but we didn't really see a lot that we liked from the receivers with Minshew. James Robinson looked really good, but Chris Thompson's back, so he should cut into the workload a bit. So I'm thinking it might be a smaller stack with just Watson and either Fuller or Cooks, and maybe not even bring anyone back with the Jags.
Yeah, I think Luton was maybe 1 of 3 – quarterbacks to have over 21 passing touchdowns and fewer than 3 picks, but he doesn't do well under pressure. I don't feel like he has a deep ball. You're right. It's just who's going to be the guy. Is it going to be Chark? But he's been very disappointing. I think it just could be, and I'm not going to get, sometimes I get nuts with these cheap quarterbacks, but I definitely won't go there. I think they could maybe just get Chenault more involved, maybe just try to keep it simple with Robinson, maybe Keelan Cole. They can move him around some bubble screens or whatnot. But I there's nothing really all that appealing to me. I know I don't feel it, but it could be sneaky though, right, Kyle? Because I don't think anyone's going to really own Chark in these guys.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think this is going to go very overlooked. And when you're talking about defenses that you want to attack, Houston's got to be up at the top, right?
So a good one.
I think you should have some interest in him here. I think James Robinson was a guy that I had the most interest in, but he's pretty expensive. 7K,
yeah,
and I have him still at about 14.5%. I think that could change a bit more as the week goes on, because I think James Conner and Chase Edmonds will become more popular and Jim Robinson could potentially slide into the radar a bit. But I think Robinson would be the guy that I would want to pair with initially, even though it might not read as like a good game script stack when you're probably not expecting the Jags to lead. But I think Robinson can be involved in either game script. So I think Robinson would be my first guy. And then I think DJ Chark would probably be the second guy. 5'2". Think that makes some sense, but I'm not really too thrilled about any of the receivers here.
No, it's hard to, at least Robinson had, I think he has at least 4 catches in 5 straight games, so he has been involved in the air, to your point. No matter the game script, he should be involved. Detroit, Minnesota, don't know about Stafford. Looks like it's he could potentially play. I'm not breaking any news here with Dalvin Cook. I mean, this guy's an absolute stud. Are you fading him at all? Like, how much exposure do you think you'll have to him?
Yeah, I have met about 32% ownership right now. So it is tough to completely fade him, because while he is my highest projected running back, I have him at about 26 points. I also have him as the best value on the entire slate in terms of running back. So whenever that happens, it is hard to get off of him. I think he's a very strong play. I think you kind of lock him in cash games. But there are ways that you can get unique with Dalvin Cook. And one way that I'm doing that is pairing him with a Lions receiver, whether that's Jones or Amendola or Marvin Hall, if you want to get really cute, or even TJ Hockenson, and then also pairing him with Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen's a guy that I think is a very strong play this week, especially when you're talking about tournaments, because not many people are going to be pairing Dalvin Cook with Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen's underpriced at 6,700 on DraftKings. I have him at under 10% ownership. And while they might not really correlate entirely well in a game where Minnesota, goes out and scores 28 points, it's probably going to be Thielen and Cook finding the end zone 3 of those times combined, just because a lot of their offensive production is so narrow. It really comes from Thielen, it comes from Cook, and then a little bit from Jefferson. So that's the way I'm approaching this game. I think Cook is an amazing play, but there are ways that you can get contrarian within this game by pairing him with guys like Thielen or even some Lions players.
So do you have a preference between maybe Hall, Amendola, or Marvin Jones? I would imagine most are just going to go to Jones and Hawkinson, but Marvin Hall is the deep threat guy in this offense. He showed up last week. He is fairly cheap. I mean, $3,800. I think he's $4,600 over on FanDuel. Does it matter if Stafford plays? If it's Chase Daniel, are you even going to bother?
If Chase Daniels plays, I think it'll be a little bit murky, but I still think I would be fine playing Marvin Jones or even Hawkinson. I don't think Daniel is the worst backup quarterback
he's
in the
capable.
NFL.
Yeah, he's fine.
And the Lions saw it last year. When Stafford went down, they were forced to roll out Jeff Driskel and David Blau, and it did not go well. So they made it a point to go out and get a reputable backup quarterback. So I think as long as Stafford continues to negative test, as long as those continue to happen, he'll be able to play. So hopefully that's the case. But if it is Daniel, I think Jones would be my favorite option. I have him at about 14 DraftKings points right now, so he's projecting fairly well. And I actually only have him at 10% ownership, I think. Partially, he's still low owned because of the fact that we're not really sure if Stafford's going to suit up or not. But choosing between these value guys, Amendola, I think, is the safer option. You know, he's underneath routes, lower A dot, shorter passes, more likely to convert those targets into catches. And Hall's more of the big play upside. We saw them play about even snaps last week. So I think I would prefer Amendola slightly. I just think he's a little bit safer, but Hall definitely carries some upside.
We know no Golladay. I'm assuming everyone just knew that by listening. I don't know if I even brought it up or you did, but no, that's why we're not talking about Kenny Golladay. He's not going to play. We don't have to spend too much time here on this Giants and Washington game. I don't know if there's anything that stands out to you. I mean, Terry McLaurin, obviously he's a stud. I think he leads the, you know, another free tool that we have over at FTN Daily, FTN Bets, FTN Fantasy.com is just team air yards. And he's near 50% of his team's air yards, which is crazy to think about. But is there anything in this game that you like at all between these two teams? We're looking at a total here of, I think it's jumped up a bit. They opened up at 41.5 to 43. Is there anything in this game for you?
Yeah, I think McLaurin's a fine option. He's just kind of in a price. Like I just mentioned Thielen. He's about $200 less than Thielen. He's $300 less than Lockett and Fuller. So he's in a price range where it's kind of hard to get to him, but I think that also contributes to lower ownership. Bradbury, who he should be shadowed by, has been really good this year, but McLaurin just kind of got the best of Bradbury, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago, 7 catches, 74 yards. So I think McLaurin can beat that matchup. And yeah, I have him at about 48% of those teams' air yards. So he is the guy there. I'm at 30% of the team's targets and 44% of the team's air yards. So when you when you're looking at his WOPR, which is basically those two stats combined, he's the best receiver on the slate. So when he has the role that you're looking for. And then I also like Antonio Gibson. I think this is a guy that a lot of the season-long watchers, you're probably pretty fond of Antonio Gibson. You've heard his name a lot because he was a highly touted season-long guy. And I think now we're going to start seeing him get ramped up even more. We saw it in the Dallas game where they were able to kind of leave J.D. McKissick off the field because they were ahead. It's another spot, you know, Washington's favorite here. Maybe they're able to do that more so. But I think we either continue to see his involvement in the rushing game or the passing game continue to improve as they're coming off a bye. He's kind of had 2 months to mold into the offense. I think we finally see Antonio Gibson really take over this offense. And he's 5,800. Not the greatest of matchups. The Giants have actually been pretty solid against the run. But Antonio Gibson and McLaurin are really the only guys I'm looking at in this game.
Yeah, coming off that big game, 20 carries, 128 yards, and a touchdown. He was great. Maybe some people are just forgetting about him, to your point, with the bye. Not totally interested in this game. Maybe I'm wrong to think, but Tennessee and Chicago, I know the Titans' defense has been awful. The Bears' offense has been brutal. I mean, potentially there could be a get-right spot for, you know, Nick Foles and company. Allen Robinson is a stud every single week. You just lock him in for double-digit targets. He just seems to be one of the safest players, in my opinion, in fantasy. And even last year in season-long leagues, he was a top-10 wideout with Mitch Trubisky thrown on the ball. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about a quarterback change. And I know Trubisky's dealing with a shoulder injury. And, you know, Robinson is a stud. My question to you is, are we fading Henry? A.J. Brown has been just okay. Jonnu Smith has been disappearing. He just hasn't shown up because I feel like Corey Davis has just been really overlooked all year long. 69 yards or a touchdown in every single game so far. His catches, his yards, his targets is right on par with A.J. Brown. But I have a little bit of respect for this Bears defense. So this game's a fade for me, but you're the expert, buddy. You tell me if I'm wrong here. Is there anyone that you're feeling?
Anytime you can get a guy with such a strong role like Allen Robinson, even like David Montgomery, and they're not really getting ownership, I know it's a tough matchup, but Allen Robinson is a guy who I have projected for 11 targets, which is second highest on the slate behind Julio. So he's gonna get the opportunities to make the plays. It's just whether Nick Foles can allow him to actually make the plays, which is a big question mark. But yeah, I think Allen Robinson's an interesting play. I probably don't get to him a lot this week because he's kind of surrounded by just a ton of good plays. But Montgomery is a guy I do have some interest in. He's had 5 targets or more in the past 3 or 4 games. I know it's for sure 3, but it might even be the last 4 games. He's been heavily involved in the passing game. He's one of the only guys on the entire slate with a 65% rushing market share and double-digit target share. So this is not really a common role anymore in the NFL where we have guys doing both, and Montgomery is doing that. And he's cheap. $5,700 is definitely an affordable price tag here. Again, the matchup's not great, but I think Montgomery is super interesting. I probably don't get to any of the Titans wide receivers. Corey Davis, the one person or one group of people that haven't been sleeping on Corey Davis is DraftKings, because his price is extremely high. $5,900 over there is a tough price tag to really get to Corey Davis. So I probably don't play him over there, but I anytime you see Derrick Henry at 12% projected ownership, which is where I have him right now, I'm going to have some interest in him. I liked Kamara last week when he was going up against the Bears, because he's a workhorse running back who's an elite product, and he's going to really have a tough matchup to kind of keep people off of him. And I think that's the same case for Henry here. So I have some interest in Derrick Henry.
You think Elliott will have some interest in Derrick Henry?
Oh, no.
No chance. Well, he's not going to have that, right?
He's not chalk now, so he might play him. I don't know.
To your point about the targets, yeah, I think it's 5 straight games where he's had at least 5 targets. And, you know, you mentioned the matchup tough. Last week was really tough, too, against the Saints. I thought he did pretty well. I mean, 89 rushing yards for a team that in New Orleans hadn't allowed a running back to get 100 yards in 50-plus games. So, he flirted with that. He needed overtime. 21 carries was a season high for him, 4.2 yards per attempt, his best total since week 2. I was just looking overall in terms of his targets and his opportunities. I mean, his 26 opportunities was the second most he's ever had, and his 21 carries the third most he's ever had. And to your point, again, with that price, you don't get too many running backs in that price tier that's going to play about 90% of the snaps. He played 86% of the snaps last week. So that is a pretty good call by you. I would like to see him obviously score some touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's what
definitely.
It's a low scoring game, but you know, you're right to bring him up at that price point. 3 more games to talk about: Vegas and the Chargers. We have Miami and Arizona and Pittsburgh and Dallas. Let's actually go to Pittsburgh and Dallas quickly. Is there something to be said about maybe a game stack with Pittsburgh, or is this going to be the James Conner show? I know he's probably projecting to be one of the most owned players in your model. What I've noticed from Big Ben is he's not really taking deep shots down the field. He's only a couple of years removed from leading the league in passing yards and passing attempts. Obviously, he had Antonio Brown on his team that year, and Juju was balling out. It's been just some short throws, and the yardage hasn't quite been there. I'm sure he could be super efficient and have 4 passing touchdowns, but I don't know, man. I feel like this could be a game where they score some points, maybe their defense scores a few points, and they just ease off a little bit, maybe use some Snell or Connor. What's your thinking with Pittsburgh, and is there anywhere you would go with the Cowboys, who are just downright pathetic all over the field?
I actually have Connor at about the third highest owned running back on the slate. I think that'll actually move up. I have Jacobs getting a pretty good amount of ownership because he's so cheap, but I do think that'll eventually change now that Jacobs kind of went through a questionable spell throughout the week with an illness. So I think Connor's going to end up, when things are all said and done, being the second highest owned running back on the slate. Obviously a phenomenal matchup. We've seen guys continually burn these Dallas guys. We've seen Kenyon Drake do it. He was really struggling. We've seen Antonio Gibson have the breakout game. We've seen a handful of other guys really have strong games against Dallas. So I do think Connor's a strong play. I think a way to get leverage on that chalk is to play, you know, the Ben Roethlisberger side of things, but I don't really love his price. And then when you're talking about who you're going to pair him with, it gets really confusing, because when you're talking about them having 3-4 guys that really can catch the ball and make plays, it's kind of the same thing that you're having with the Chiefs, but are you confident that Ben Roethlisberger has that 5-touchdown upside, 4-touchdown upside? I know we've seen it a couple times this year, but I'm not as confident in Big Ben as I am in Patrick Mahomes. And like you mentioned, he's not really pushing the ball down the field. So the upside's not really there. When you're talking about his ADOT, he's at about a 7.06 ADOT, which is not very good. It's very low. And the only person, there's 2 people that are lower on the slate. It's Tua, who is at 5 after 1 game, and it's Kyle Allen, who's at 6.5. Exactly. So, it's just really hard to see a fact where Ben Roethlisberger is pushing the ball down the field. But I will say I really am intrigued in Deontay Johnson here this week at 5K on DraftKings. He was, when I go through it on Monday night or Monday morning, I go through all the ownership and, or sorry, all the pricings, and I kind of see guys that I think are highly priced or too cheap. And Deontay Johnson stood out very quickly at 5K. He's just a guy who, in games where he's actually finished and started and played the entire game and hasn't left them early, which he's left three games early. Last week he returned, but he left it, got his hamstring checked out. Prior to those, he was at a 30% target market share. So he's the guy there, it seems. And obviously, we've seen Juju become more involved. We've seen Chase Claypool kind of be introduced to the world. But Deontay Johnson's the cheapest receiver on the Steelers' offense, and I don't feel like that should be the case yet. I feel like he should be the most expensive. So Deontay Johnson's probably the guy that I'm going to have the most exposure to in this game. If Zeke sits, I know he's been questionable with the hamstring injury. If Zeke sits, I think Tony Pollard's a very strong play at 4K. It'd be interesting to see where his ownership falls in a tough matchup, but I think it'd be Pollard if Zeke sits, and then Deontay Johnson, it would be the main guy if Zeke plays.
Yeah, Pollard is, I mean, you can make the case that he's looked better than Zeke in the past couple of games. He's starting to get a bit more run, looks fresher, catching balls out of the backfield. Game script probably going to suit him to catch a few more balls out of the backfield. The last time I checked, the Steelers were 14.5 point favorites. Johnson, the price on Johnson is very interesting because you're right. The three games that he's played, he's had double-digit targets. He has been very frustrating, and that's the thing with DFS. And for people who are just like, oh, Johnson, this is the reason that I'm 2-6 in my season-long league. I don't want anything to do with that guy, but I like the fact that you brought him up, and there is a bit of a price point there. 240 yards or fewer in five games for Ben so far this season. So I mean, again, Dallas is not going to be able to push the pace for him to be able to check to get past that, but maybe a couple of bombs there to Johnson. All right, Vegas and the Chargers. I feel like there's kind of a lot to like here. There could be some points scored. You mentioned Jacobs. I was in on Ruggs to a certain extent. I came off of him a little bit last week because of the weather. Waller, I feel like, is a great guy to play and one of the safest tight ends. And Hunter Henry has been a bit frustrating, but I still like him a little bit too. And Keenan Allen is another guy. When we talk about Allen Robinson, Keenan Allen is another one who just gets a lot of targets. And he just I see his catch prop every single time, Kyle, every week. It's like 5.5, 6.5. I'm just keep slamming the over on this guy. Herbert is really locked in. And then Herbert, this dude is not playing like a rookie at all. He is leading a top five in a lot of metrics, and it seems like every single week he's tossing three touchdowns in at least 300 yards, and they're throwing the ball a lot. I mean, 43 passing attempts last week, 43 the week before that. He had 49 against Carolina week three. Do you feel like this is going to be a up-tempo game, a lot of scoring? Because I know how the Raiders want to play. I mean, Gruden had the biggest smile on his face last week when Jacobs had over 30 carries and they just held the ball the entire game. Smash mouth football, old school, three tight ends on the field. Let's just run the rock with Jacobs. But do you feel like the Chargers are going to be able to score some points? Maybe that Carr has to push the pace a little bit too, because he actually, when you look at his numbers, Kyle, and I know you have, pretty accurate, and he's had himself a pretty good season spreading the ball around to all these guys. So it's tough after Waller to figure out which guy it is. For me, it's not Aguilar. And if you like Aguilar, my apologies. Maybe it's the hat that I'm rocking that, he just absolutely sucked in Philly. But I just feel like those were a couple good games that he had in that stretch. I think the deep threat guy is Ruggs. And, Waller is the one that I really like inside that offense. What's your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I think part of the reason why I have Jacobs popping so highly in terms of ownership is because I think this game is going to be a game where people are trying to get exposure to, and it makes some sense. You're right. Derek Carr has been playing some great football. I mean, I know people like to rag on Derek Carr because it's
too much, previous, I think.
Yeah, in previous years, it's been easier to do, but he's in a good spot. He finally has some weapons, not including Nelson Agholor. I'm with you. I don't like Nelson Agholor, but Waller is one of the better tight ends in the league. Henry Ruggs, who should have had a touchdown last week. He has to get those feet in there, and hopefully he can find that end zone here this week. So I like Ruggs. I like Waller a bit. Waller's the first option there, but Ruggs, he had 18% of the team's targets last week. In previous weeks, you really hadn't seen him be consistently involved. I think if he's around 18%, and then obviously he'll have some games that are hopefully higher in that target share, I think Ruggs could be a good play here this week. As far as the Chargers side, it's really a nice stack to include because you have Herbert, who's a little bit expensive, but he has a ceiling. We've seen it. But when you're talking about guys that you want to pair him with, it's really easy. It's Keenan Allen. And then if you're going to double stack him, you can decide between Mike Williams or Hunter Henry. Well, Hunter Henry, I like a lot this week as well. It's a phenomenal matchup, probably the best matchup he's had all year. And he's been heavily involved. He just hasn't really converted. He's had about 20% of the team's targets throughout the year. And it really hasn't had the opportunity to be involved in the red zone because this team is scoring 70-yard touchdowns every week, it seems. So I think Hunter Henry's a strong play, kind of a buy-low candidate here. So I really like this game. My favorites from this game are Keenan Allen and Darren Waller with Ruggs and Mike Williams even, and then Hunter Henry kind of being those ancillary pieces in this game that I have interest in.
Is it fair to say, like, if you're a cash game player playing head-to-heads and some double-ups, Waller and Keenan Allen, and then maybe if you're looking for some, you know, you're putting multiple lineups together, maybe Mike Williams or potentially Ruggs as the deep threats in this offense?
Yeah, definitely. I think Keenan Allen is probably, throughout the year, he's been like a cash game staple because he's getting the work of Davante Adams, but he's just not priced the same. I know the price has gone up a little bit, but it only went up $800. He's still only 7K on DraftKings. So I still think that's too cheap for the kind of role that he's going to have. So yeah. And then Darren Waller, 27% target market share on the year, and he's still in the 5Ks. So those are two really, really strong cash game plays this week.
Yeah, I wouldn't take too much stock into last week with Waller. I know he was very popular. I talked a lot about him last week as well. Didn't get the over on his yardage prop, but again, that, I just felt like that was some bad weather and they were just really running the rock there. Final game, and then we'll get you out of here, buddy. Miami and Arizona. Chase Edmonds, been talking a lot about this guy. This is episode 10, been talking about him in every single episode. I'd imagine he's checking out, pretty popular as well, which makes me feel like maybe people are coming off of DeAndre Hopkins just slightly and Kyler Murray, because Murray's a guy that I just feel like I've played all year long. I mean, we were talking about Herbert and looking overall in terms of just DraftKings points per game, of course, Russell at the top 32, Kyler 29.9, Mahomes 27.5, Herbert in there at 27. Kyler's been great. You got that rushing floor as well. You know, Miami, I had to take a double take. They've allowed the fewest points per game, like 18. You can run all over them, but their secondary, they spent a lot of money. They've made some moves in the offseason. It's been okay. And they got after Goff, obviously a different quarterback, number one scoring defense in all football. Are you going to have exposure to Chase Edmonds, or do you think is this crazy for me to say that it could be a sneaky stack between Kyler and Hopkins where other people are paying up maybe just for the running backs or other wide receivers?
Yeah, I have it being very sneaky. I have Murray at about 6% ownership, and I have Hopkins under 10% at, just over 10%, 10.3. Okay. So
still,
yeah, I mean, when you're talking about guys with ceilings, it's really hard to leave Murray out of that conversation. He's obviously probably in the top two or three in terms of highest ceilings out of the quarterbacks. And Hopkins, you could probably argue he has the highest ceiling of any receiver on the slate. So these guys have this kind of ownership. I know they're expensive, but we've talked about some value plays. And when you're talking purely about Hopkins, you kind of feel like you can capture a lot of the Arizona's passing work by just playing Hopkins. So even if you wanted to go with the cheap sack like Drew Lock that we talked about earlier, pair him with Hopkins in there to get contrarian and capture a lot of upside, a lot of ceiling from that Arizona passing attack. You're right. This secondary for Miami has been pretty incredible. Imagine if they still had Minka Fitzpatrick, how good that secondary would be.
Yeah.
Man, it'd be really good. But yeah, Edmonds, I do like a lot. I have him as the second highest owned running back so far this week, but I still only have him at 17%. I think that's still too low. I think we really see him take over this offense. Obviously, he was heavily involved even with Kenyon Drake there. And I think as long as they continue to involve him in the passing game, he's going to have a very strong fantasy role. That was really the only main issue with Kenyon Drake. Obviously, he wasn't very efficient and he wasn't really scoring, but the lack of passing game work from Kenyon Drake was really killing his role. If Edmonds steps in there and he's getting, you know, mid-teens or, you know, 12 to 14 carries as well as the passing work, I think he's a very strong play and what is a good matchup.
Yeah, I think you feel the same, and I think most people feel the same at FTN. We all like Chase Edmonds, and we've all been pushing for Chase Edmonds to take over the backfield. He has been the better back, and now is, to your point, no Kenyon Drake, and you know, at least 5 grabs in 3 of his past 4 games. Kyle, a pleasure, man, and I know the people watching and listening are super fired up because it's taken me 10 episodes to finally get you on this show. I know you're a busy guy, so I appreciate all your time. Make sure you check out Kyle Murray on social media, on the Twitter machine, KMurDFS. And again, make sure you check him out Friday nights with Pat Mayo. You can go back and watch that show, FTNDaily.com, in case you miss it. And check him out Sunday mornings. He'll update his projections. And he's great on Twitter. And if you do decide, and you should, get that DFS season pass over at FTN Daily, you can ask him anytime, any questions inside the Discord chat. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And one thing to note about that Friday show, it's actually becoming free now. So starting this week, the show's free. So you can watch it back and it'll be free and open to anybody. Yeah, we couldn't keep Pat Mayo behind the paywall. He's just too good for the people. So yeah,
fair enough. Yeah. Has that been free? Because I may have dropped the ball there. Has that been free? You've just made it free?
Yeah, this is going to be the first week that it's free. Yep.
It makes sense. It's a fantastic conversation. The guys will dive in a little bit deeper than what you and I did. So, again, I really appreciate you jumping on, man. Make sure you give Kyle a follow. Any questions you have, just leave them in the YouTube page right in the comment section. And I will just say, subscribe to the FTN YouTube page. We're going to be doing a lot of just cool videos over there, so you don't want to miss out. Kyle, myself, Chris Meany, enjoy. Good luck week 9, and we'll catch you later. Cheers.